You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 15 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Derek Jansen van Rensburg. I want to touch on Pick and Pay. Of course, Brash has left. And if we've got a moment, I want to touch on Curo Education Stocks. Curo did a small deal, but is there opportunity there? I think they're struggling, and it's going to be a tough 21 perhaps as well. Mohammed Nala, what is money? Can we still trust it in its current form? Yesterday's poll, do you trade CFDs? 38% yes, 39% no, and 23% say you need to learn. Those who want to learn, then Google's your friend. There's a ton out there. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: operating environment potentially improving for SA's cement industry. They're trying to get anti-dumping duties on imported cement, talking with government, and of course infrastructure perhaps bringing back some demand. Certainly things looking a bit better for that industry locally. And from Reuters, Biden's $1.9 trillion rescue package, bridge for hard-hit economy. So President-elect Joe Biden coming in big with almost a $2 trillion, which includes another $1,400 in direct checks to Americans. Take the total package over the past year to $5.2 trillion, and will be, I mean, it'll be a boost for the U.S. economy, a surge in jobs, spending, and the like. Morning markets, red in the U.S., S&P down 0.4, NASDAQ off 0.1. Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.2, Tokyo down 0.1. Commodities mostly red, rhodium still above $20,000 an ounce, gold 1850, rand 1511. Top 40 opening call, red open, about a fifth of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Derek Jansen van Rensburg. He is, of course, portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. Appreciate your time. I hope you had a great break and all the best for 2021. Richard Brasher exited Pick and Pay, announced that he's leaving. He'd been there 8 years. I got to say, I hadn't realized it was that long. I initially was fairly critical of his turnaround. I didn't think it was happening. Truthfully, my sense is it probably just took longer, which I suppose makes sense. Pick and Pay was a fair bit of a mess when he joined it. Your take on the state of Pick and Pay as he exits?
Yeah, I think, an interesting move and an interesting announcement to the markets. I think if we just go back over the 8 years and you look at Brasher's kind of that macroeconomic backdrop that he's had to deal with, as you said, I think he came into Pick and Pay when it needed a bit of direction, and he had a difficult task at hand. So yeah. Now, if you just look at obviously the share price is one thing, but if you just look at some of the sort of accounting achievements that he did achieve through his sort of 8 year period at the business, I think he did an okay job. You know, obviously, as I said, you know, we're dealing with a very sort of weak macroeconomic backdrop. But certainly Pick and Pay, changing a lot of what they do, some really good quality loyalty programs that came into play, and a little bit of margin expansion. So I think if you just look at the retail sector as a whole, I certainly think that Pick and Pay fared a lot better than some of the other retailers out there. So, yeah, you know, I think he's kind of set a base and a platform for the new CEO to take over. And obviously, you know, we hope that we can see a better environment from an SA economic backdrop, which should hopefully spell into some better performance in the share price looking forward.
Yeah, I mean, the share price didn't do a heck of a lot, but in truth, it did better than most of its competitors. And as you say, good loyalty program, distribution centers in place, which they hadn't had before, and margin expansion, which is where I was critiquing him, but he did get that working in the end. We saw an announcement from Curo that they're going to acquire St. George's Prep School, a very, very small acquisition for them. They didn't even announce the amount, etc. But education stocks generally, obviously a tough 2020 for them. Stay at home, parents under pressure, fees struggling to collect, I suspect. 21 likely to be another tough year for them. Is this a sector, Kira, Advertech, Stadio, that you're looking at for potential investments, or rather stay away for the moment?
Look, I think a lot of these stocks have been priced for destruction at these levels. So, you know, we obviously did see Kira do a rights issue a little back, which obviously helped to kind of bolster their balance sheet somewhat, and I guess enable them to do these small acquisitions. I guess, you know, acquisitions are all about the price you pay and obviously how potentially earnings enhancing they're going to be in the sort of medium to long term. So I think this is certainly giving them an ability to pick up, let's just call it, depressed assets in a market that hopefully you're buying them at decent levels from a PE perspective. And just obviously increasing your sort of balance sheet and quality of assets essentially at the end of the day. So, you know, if there's one sort of stock in the education sector that I kind of feel has got some upside, it's probably Kira. Mm-hmm. You know, as you rightly stated, you know, it's been a very difficult time for a lot of these education stocks. COVID has caught a lot of people by surprise, and obviously there's a big sort of technological change as to how business is done. But I think, you know, they're obviously adapting to the environment, online schooling, and obviously looking to sort of adapt to the changing environment. So, you know, at sort of R9.50-ish, I think that's where it's trading. I still think there's some fundamental value unlock in it. You know, it's a patient wait and obviously very much an emerging market play from an SA perspective. So, you know, I'm sort of swaying to the side of being cautiously optimistic about it. And, you know, if you've got some, I tend to kind of just leave them buried in the bottom drawer of a portfolio and, you know, keep an eye on them. Stadio as well, I think, also looks quite interesting at a bit of a run, you know, going up to that R2 level, but also some fundamental value. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these education stocks adapt and start to change, you know, to the environmental backdrop that they're faced with at this stage.
Yeah, and typically if a parent can afford, they will pay for a child's education. Derek Jensen from Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital, really appreciate your time this morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Mohammed Nala. He's a founder and a strategist at monows.com, MOEKNOWS.com. Mohammed, really appreciate your time. You're in Toronto, Canada, so some time zone fun to play with there. You published a really interesting piece on your website, What is Money? And it's something which is... So it's fascinated me ever since I was a small little kid. And at its heart, I suppose, you say it's a go-between. It's a medium of exchange. And as long as me and you agree on it, that medium, it can be money in a sense.
Absolutely, Simon. Thanks for having me. Thanks to the listeners as well. Money is this abstraction. You know, people don't think about it. It reminds me of that old saying of the fish that's swimming around. He says to the fish next to him, "You know, I'm looking for the ocean." The guy says, "It's all around you." And he says, "No, well, this is water. I'm looking for the ocean." You know, that's kind of what money is. It's this go-between. I guess, you know, the origins of it is that as humanity emerged out of a barter system, it just wasn't practical to say, "Here, take my cows, I want some wheat." Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't want your wheat. And so, you know, it kind of evolved from that. And early days, you know, it was little shiny glass beads, it was seashells. And then over time, you know, it evolved, it became gold coins, it became what we now know today as kind of fiat currency or money, whether that's rands or dollars. And I think we're at the cusp of another evolution in how the world is seeing money. And that's why I thought it was also quite timeous to write an article like this, because, you know, what is our relationship with money? How do we see money? And where is it going over the course of maybe the next decade or two?
Yeah, because I suppose, I mean, for a long time, as you say, it was glass beads, it was seashells, which didn't perhaps meet all of the requirements. You say it needs to be durable, portable, divisible, and uniform. And seashells and glass beads don't meet all of those requirements. I suppose, in a sense, gold was our first sort of proper money in that it really worked as money. And it worked incredibly well for thousands of years. And before that, it would have been the Spanish and silver. And then we kind of got off that gold. And that's when things sort of started to go perhaps a little bit wobbly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, gold, for those that follow me on Twitter, that's at Mohammed Nala, you know, you'll know I've been a gold bug for quite some time, mm-hmm. Simon. I've always liked gold, and it's because it's nice and shiny, but it's also because gold ticks all of those boxes that we mentioned. You know, money has got to be durable, so it shouldn't perish, yeah. You know, so you tick that box. It's got to be portable, so you've got to be able to move it across from location to location so that it can function as a medium of exchange. It's also got to be divisible, so you've got to be able to say, you know, I've got a coin of gold, or I've got a tenth of a coin, or whatever it is, or even like normal currency, you know, rands and cents, dollars and cents, mm-hmm. so that you can facilitate different transaction sizes. Then quite importantly, as you mentioned, it's got to be uniform. So that means that it's a standard unit rather than having these different variants. And that's why, for example, things like seashells and beads wouldn't work. Gold, we could eventually get it to a certain level of fineness that meant that a particular gold coin was worth what it was worth wherever it was. And then lastly, and quite importantly, is that there's got to be limited supply or perceived scarcity. And I think that's where we kind of came unstuck, Simon, is that, you know, remember the world had this gold standard up until 1971 for a variety of reasons. You know, different countries had fallen mm-hmm. off the gold standard following World War II. And by once that was done, the U.S. dollar was effectively the only global currency that was still backed by gold. And then eventually Vietnam happened, and the U.S. went the same way as many other governments. Is they had to pay for these massive expenses. They had large deficits, but they had a finite supply of gold. And the only way to allow and facilitate that expansion of the monetary base was to decouple from a gold standard. And that effectively happened in 1971. And so from 1971 till now, yes, the U.S. dollar has still been the global reserve currency, but we've also seen an erosion of trust from the general public, and this has really become, you know, where the momentum has kind of gathered some steam in more recent times, is that do people trust governments and sovereigns and central banks with the underlying value of their money? And I would argue that trust was certainly eroded and continues to be eroded in more modern times. With the advent of these massive stimulus programs, obviously, yes, we've had global financial crisis, sure, now we've got a pandemic. With all of that, you know, this fear of rampant money printing eroding the value of a dollar or of a rand is real. And that's why I think this is certainly something that's become quite topical again.
And one of the key points, and it was probably always around, my monetary history doesn't go far enough back, but is inflation. And that's perhaps part of that breakdown of trust. And it comes directly from printing money. Now, you know, whether it's for Vietnam War, whether it's for a pandemic, you put more into supply. And that is to your fifth point, which is that limited supply. As we are printing more and more of it, money is being devalued. My 100 rand doesn't serve as well this year as it did a year or a decade ago. And that kind of, that must breed mistrust to a degree into monetary policy and politicians.
Yeah, and I mean, remember that we've had inflation targeting as the main kind of policy anchor, certainly in a market like South Africa. So mm-hmm. that's important because that serves to protect the value of the rand in your pocket. But the simple reality is if we look at it all the way back to 1971, which is when effectively the world decoupled from the gold standard, you know, we had, and I talk specifically of the U.S. here, and you can extrapolate that to any number of economies around the world, you've had inflation that effectively became one-tailed. Now, what I mean when I say that is if you look at historical cycles, you've had periods mm-hmm. of inflation and deflation. So prices could go up, but prices could also go down. And they correlated with a business cycle and economic cycle. But following 1971, the massive expansion of debt that we've seen globally, you've seen one-tailed inflation, where central bankers effectively want to try and curb inflation, but they want to keep it on the inflation side of things rather than have deflation manifest. And that's really where you've seen this one-tailed erosion of the value of a dollar, for example. So the example I use is if you look at a dollar today, it's worth the equivalent of only 15 cents in 1971 dollars.
Yeah,
and that speaks to a massive erosion of value.
And that's 40 years pretty much in a working lifetime. You've seen massive erosion in that value in that holding
50 years,
power.
Simon. 50 Sorry, 50. Years, 1970 to now. It's
of course,
50.
That's
I mean,
my age.
5 decades.
Sorry, my math is poor.
Five decades. But these macro cycles, you know, they take a long time to play out. I mean, the other example, if you want to really go back into history mm-hmm. that I'd use, is that the Romans effectively had what was called the Roman debasement. And it was the same kind of thing, is they had to pay for these wars. And what they had to do then is that they devalued each gold coin or silver coin by decreasing the amount of pure gold or pure silver in the coin. And that took about 300 years, but resulted in the fall of the Roman Empire. So that's kind of the span of time that we're talking about here. 50 years is just a blip in the greater span of history, but I do think that these things seem to be gathering some sort of momentum.
It is a blip, but let's be quite clear, and you make it quite clear there, that the Roman Empire, you know, one of the key reasons why it collapsed was its debasement of its currency and the impact. And it might have taken 3 centuries to happen, but it's not a non-causal event if you are debasing. And we have certainly, and again, you know, we had a global financial crisis, we're currently in a pandemic, but the last decade and a bit has seen, you know, printing presses the world over going absolutely crazy.
Absolutely. And I think it's now more so, you know, you've got the rise of MMT or modern monetary theory mm-hmm. that's certainly scaring a lot of people. You've got these massive stimulus checks. And the difference this time around is during the financial crisis of 08, you've had massive quantitative easing, but all of that kind of got trapped in the financial system. This time around, it's going to flow through into people's pockets. It's a fiscal stimulus as well as a monetary debasement. And maybe that results in this inflation that we're talking about. Do I think it all falls in a heap right now? No, but I do think that people need to contextualize this in a much longer term time scale and understand what is happening around them, because it really will inform how you go about managing your own financial affairs. I mean, in my article, Simon, which people can find on my website, mo-knows.com, you know, I also go and look at what does it mean for, you know, the man or woman on the street in terms of have your asset prices actually just kept pace with this monetary debasement. And if you look at that, the real winners were basically, if you look at it, gold and equity markets, the S&P 500, for example, over that time period. The houses have kept up some of the pace, but it means that people that are earning a salary that doesn't necessarily keep up track with that inflation, they've been left behind. And it's generally why people with assets, with financial assets more specifically, tend to have been able to hedge themselves or create a buffer against this sort of monetary debasement. But let's not fool ourselves. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're getting phenomenally richer. It just means that we're keeping pace with what the value of our money should have been.
Yeah, we are treading water. And I like your point around time. You know, I often criticize gold. Peaked in the early 80s and then didn't peak again until, 2011, August, when the U.S. got a minor downgrade. But in the bigger picture, 30 years is absolutely nothing. But that then brings me to a last question, because we're running out of some time here. Enter Bitcoin. I mean, and there's a lot to be said in favor of Bitcoin. There's a lot against it. Volatility means it can't be a currency. But volatility, if I look at Bitcoin, it ticks all those boxes: durability, portability, divisibility, uniformity, and limited supply.
Yeah, look, I mean, Bitcoin's still probably in its infancy. We probably need an entire different show to do this. In fact, you know, Simon, on my podcast, Magic Markets, it's something that we actually discussed in a recording that we had just done last night and should be released quite shortly. But again, there's a lot to go into it. Yes, it's durable. You know, it's a digital asset. Yes, it's portable. It can move easily across borders. Divisibility, I mean, you can add a whole bunch of decimal points to it. Yes, it's uniform. Yes, in fact, for me, the saving grace is Bitcoin scarcity. You know, there's a limited supply that comes through. Some of the other challenges with Bitcoin, however, come about in terms of the fact that, you know, is it going to be acceptable for transactional purposes? Yeah. I think, you know, the fact that it takes quite long to transfer and clear, the fact that there are actually still some transaction fees. And then lastly, there's a massive regulatory risk to Bitcoin, because remember, sovereigns and central banks are going to be loath to give up their, let's call it, their sovereignty over money. Mm-hmm. And so you're likely to see, in fact, just yesterday I saw an article citing Christine Lagarde from the ECB saying that Bitcoin needs to be regulated. And that's also because it's quite new. There have been some nefarious bad actors using it in unintended ways, and consequences obviously flow from that. So, yes, I think it's in its infancy. The concept, I like the concept. I like the concept of crypto assets in general, but I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of where this can go. And I certainly wouldn't advocate going out there and buying it, not certainly with the volatility that we're seeing right now. It doesn't suit my risk appetite, certainly. But there's something that needs to be said, is that I think it's born out of this distrust that we've spoken about. It's been born out of this debasement of fiat currency and money as we know it. And it's going to give birth to, I guess, the next age or generation of how we view assets and certainly how we view money. Is Bitcoin the glass bead or the seashell of our time? I think that's really the question we should be asking.
Yep. And again, back to time, Bitcoin's 10 years. That is baby steps in the process. We'll leave it there. Mohammed Nala, founder and strategist, monos.com. Mohammed, really appreciate your insights. So some question from that, our poll on the MoneyWeb Twitter account, at MoneyWeb. What do you consider real money? I mean, is cash king? Is it gold? Is it crypto? Is it perhaps something else? You can tell us in the comments. You'll find that on Twitter at MoneyWeb. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider with license number 50483. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning in MoneyWeb website and the app from 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.